Welcome, everyone, to another Baseball America College Podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I am John Manuel. This season's College Podcast is sponsored by Project Lomo. Logan Morrison of the Miami Marlins lost his dad to cancer in 2010 and has worked tirelessly for a cause he cares about, fighting lung cancer. Now he's asking young fans to find a cause they care about and do something about it. Last Wednesday, Logan visited Miami High School to officially launch this program and address an audience of more than 300 students. You can learn about it at projectlomo.mlblogs.com. It's a great initiative, and the young fans who do the most amazing projects will have a chance to go to a Marlins game, meet Logan Morrison and some of his teammates, throw out the first pitch, and win $1,000. Once again, that's projectlomo.mlblogs.com, sponsoring our podcast this year. And Aaron, we're glad to have another college podcast sponsor this year, and Project Lomo. It just sounds awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, last week, the day they launched this thing, you know, I saw Logan tweeted something out about it and could tell he's very excited about it. I went ahead and retweeted it, you know, and get some more attention out there. Not that I have nearly as many followers as Logan Morrison has, but, you know, it's a pretty cool thing. And certainly I hope all of our listeners check it out.
Yeah, I mean, Logan Morrison was one of the first big leaguers who really just really took to Twitter and made it a big deal. That it really kind of showed, I shouldn't say made it a big deal. He's a guy who showed that athletes could kind of break down that wall, and that basically guys like us weren't necessarily needed. You know, you could just talk right to the athletes,
right.
At least reporters on the ground. You know, I still think are needed, but there's just getting quotes isn't enough anymore. I think, Aaron, we do need expert analysis from people like you to sift out a very confusing college baseball landscape, which at the top is quite defined. We know who our top teams are. Some of the top seven teams have been some permutation of North Carolina, Vanderbilt, LSU, Cal State, Fullerton, NC State, Oregon State, Virginia for a decent amount of time. I guess most of the year you had Florida State in there instead of NC State, but the Wolfpack back basically where they were the preseason when they were number eight. The top 10 teams sure seem like they've been, you know, the top 12 really in our rankings right now have been our teams that have been there for most of the year. The top 15 is fairly defined, but the back of the rankings have been a cluster all year here. It's just been a real difficult chore sorting out those teams at the back of our rankings. So we need guys like you to tell us which team should be there. And this week at the back of our top 25 rankings, a real interesting discussion. We wound up bringing in two Big East teams, and neither one of them is Notre Dame, which lost a series to South Florida. But the South Florida Bulls, whom you wrote about last week in Three Strikes, are in there. And Pittsburgh, which has been written about in Three Strikes this year. I guess actually that was a streaking blog earlier in the year, back when we had a separate college blog. And they won that series at Pittsburgh, I mean at Wichita State. But South Florida and Pittsburgh both in the rankings this week. And three Big East teams in the rankings. Are there going to be three Big East teams in the field of 64? Are there going to be four Big East teams in the field of 64? First off, the bigger question, how did things align for the Big East to have such a big year in college baseball?
Well, you know, I think part of it, John, is the new RPI formula has benefited Northern teams as it was intended to. You know, this new formula rewards road wins more than home wins, and these Big East teams, for the most part, have had to travel, you know, for the first several weeks of the season, you're on the road when you're playing, you know, you play in New York, New Jersey or something. I mean, so as a whole, that boosts the league's RPI and, you know, which helps the teams at the top. And now, you know, these teams have been good. They've just, you know, you've got some good clubs that have been very consistent, won a lot of games. I mean, Louisville, 37-10, Pittsburgh's 36-11, you know, gaudy overall records. And then you got, you know, Notre Dame and South Florida are both right in the mix from an RPI standpoint. Obviously, this weekend was a little bit of a setback for Notre Dame, but they're still 33 in the Warren Nolan RPI that I'm looking at the moment. And South Florida's had to come a long way. I mean, they were outside the top 100, I think, for a while, and now they're way up to number 52. So they're right in the mix for an at-large, and they're red hot. They won 17 out of 18 games. I mean, you look at South Florida's resume, you know, and they're a different team now than they were the first several weeks of the season. I mean, the light kind of switched on for them, and since then, you know, they've got that nice sweep over Pitt. Now they got a road series win at Notre Dame. You know, they've been sweeping other series against the lesser teams in the league. You know, so they're taking care of business. I mean, they're 5-7 against the top 50, so they've got 12 games against the top 50 in the RPI, and they've won five of them. That's respectable. And they're doing it with pitching and defense and timely hitting and manufacturing runs. I mean, it's a formula we see a lot with successful teams in college baseball right now. They're not going to blow you away offensively, but they battle, and it's not huge arms either with this team. I mean, it's strike throwers.
Right.
I mean, they do have a couple of good arms and a couple of guys that are good prospects, but this team isn't, they're not going to wow you. But they're playing well. And I think they deserve to be ranked based on their resume. And right now I think they're on track to get in that large bid too.
It really does seem, Aaron, like the Big East, even if Notre Dame, which has the highest RPI, doesn't get an at-large berth, it still feels like this could be a four-bid league as you had them in midweek stock report. I know I'm on the Seton Hall bandwagon. I feel like I'm the only one. but am I crazy, or has Seton Hall got a real shot right now? Their RPI is in that 40 range. I just feel like even if Notre Dame doesn't get in, that Seton Hall will. I mean, this is a team that they've won 9 in a row. I know they don't have a real loud resume as far as the team they've beaten. Most of the teams they've beaten have been the not as good teams in the Big East. They're making hay against some of the teams that are not as good. But we talked about it a couple weeks ago. They had this. Villanova and Cincinnati have had bad seasons, and they went on the road and swept both those series. If they win this series this weekend at home against South Florida, and then they beat St. John's, I got to feel like Seton Hall is going to be the team that gets into regionals. They've gotten into regionals recently. They got an ace in John Pruszynski, who I think we both think is a definite dude, a really good college pitcher. They've got a slugger in Sal Annunziato, had a nice summer in the Coastal Plain League, got some power. They steal a ton of bases. I think that Seton Hall's a sleeper. Tell me I'm wrong on Seton Hall.
No, I think you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. And they're right now they're number 42 in the RPI, and the RPI needs report says these guys can get into the top 32 if they win all their last six games. And if they win 5 out of 6, then you're still in the top 45. Now that's going to be a little hard because South Florida is obviously red hot, and they got South Florida coming up next, but it's at home.
St. John's is good. St. John's is good.
St. John's is just okay. I mean, they're not actually, I don't think they are very good. They're 20 and 30 overall. I mean, it's not a,
It's an Eddie Blanks ball club. You know, they're going to battle.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Eddie Blanks clubs won't give you anything, but, yeah, I mean St. John's or Seton Hall, rather. Excuse me, they're alive. I mean, they're right here in the mix. So you're looking at Pittsburgh, South Florida, Louisville, Seton Hall, and Notre Dame. You've got five teams here with legitimate regional chances, and I think the way the last couple of weeks in the Big East tournament play out will be huge. But I think this could be a four bid league, and I know that sounds crazy. Maybe you're thinking that won't happen. Maybe they'll just take three teams in some order. There's a new reality now with this RPI. It changes the landscape a little bit. If it means we take four Big East teams instead of two, I don't think that's a bad thing, especially since it's a good league this year.
Yeah, those four teams have to have earned it, and I do feel like these teams have done some things to earn that. I'm very impressed by Seton Hall's ability to come back from that 0-9 start and not pack it up and pack it in. And I don't know how much of an RPI bump they're getting from sweeping that series at Pepperdine, but that's pretty loud. I do think go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was interrupting you, John, but I think, yeah, exactly. I think first of all that I'm going to be very curious. I just want to interject this point. I'm going to be very curious to see if the committee still uses the RPI as such a hard and fast guideline as it has in the past. Or I wonder if this year, it'll be very interesting to see now that there's a new RPI formula, do they still value it? You still have to basically be in the top 50 to get a bid. Will they disregard the RPI because they don't like the results? I don't know.
That's very possible.
I'm curious to see how that happens.
That's a great point. That's a really, really interesting point. If there's been this significant change in the RPI, and we've noticed, I think it's undeniable that it's helping northern teams in the. It's helping the less. It's helping the little guy, Mercer, South Alabama. Some of these teams that are good program, they've been good programs or good teams, or in the past they'd be good mid majors. All of a sudden, you're looking at those teams with really gaudy RPI numbers. And, you have some teams like Stanford and Arizona that don't. I mean, they haven't had great years, but it the RPI just looks different than it has in the past. There's no doubt about that. I think part of that's just the increased parity that's calculated. So, it's the Baseball America College Podcast with John Manuel and Aaron Fitt. Aaron is back now from our little technical difficulty there, but Aaron, the other league that I think is fighting to get four bids. I think there are a lot of traditional power leagues. There are a couple, I should say, that you think of as traditionally better leagues in the Big East that are going to get fewer bids. And one of them is Conference USA. I think that's a given. Conference USA had a really brutal year this year. But the other one in there to me is the Big 12. But it seems like the Big 12 is starting to make a little bit of a run, Aaron, at getting four bids. And part of that is Oklahoma coming down. Part of it is the Sunflower State, Kansas and Kansas State having strong years. Baylor's kind of in that mix, I guess not really. But coming on like a freaking freight train is West, by God, Virginia. They win 2 out of 3 this weekend against Oklahoma. You've written about West Virginia. It's another South Florida scene here, isn't it, Aaron? They're a pitching and defense team that just tries to scratch out a run.
No, I think that's actually not
Okay.
probably. I think they're more of an offensive team. I think they're very athletic. I think when you look at they really have the one pitcher who,
Yeah, Vescarallo,
I think a
whatever.
legit. No, Harrison Musgrave. He's
I'm
the guy
confusing
that's.
them in Appalachian State. They're both Mountaineers.
Gotcha. But this West Virginia team to me is, they're. First of all, you have to give the coaching staff a lot of credit because this team has overachieved. Randy Mays even used that word when I talked to him a couple weeks ago. He said that, on pitching in particular, has overachieved because based on talent, there's not a lot of arms here, that are great. I mean, Harrison Musgrave is a very good arm, and he's had a very good year. He might be the pitcher of the year in the Big 12 by the time as well. I mean, John Gray is gonna be the pitcher of the year, but he's on the short list. But I mean, Corey Walther's got a really good arm. Arm for them, but he's been erratic. He's been up and down. And then they've had guys that just kind of compete, John Means and Dan Dierdorf. And Paul Pascal's been fantastic at the back of the bullpen. But the pitching staff, they've done enough. I mean, they've really, you got to give the coaching staff credit and then give the pitchers credit because they've competed hard. But this is a good offensive team. They got some power. Ryan McBroom's got some pop in there. Ryan Tuntland's had a fantastic year for them.
Right.
He's kind of their best overall hitter. He hits for average, he hits for a little bit of pop, drives the gap some, but the team has a lot of speed. They run the bases very aggressively. Brady Wilson is a really good athlete. He can fly, and he might not be the fastest guy on the team. Bobby Boyd, I think, is faster. That's what stands out about this team is the athleticism. Up and down the lineup, you got guys with occasional power. I mean, mostly it's McBroom and Frazier and maybe Ryan Tuntland that can drive the ball out of the park. But this team is, they're going to have guys drafted. I mean, they've got talent on offense, and compared to most of the other teams in this league, they're more offensive than Oklahoma.
Yeah. They scored 18 runs those last 2 games, and Oklahoma's certainly a little crippled with Dylan Overton out with, what is it, a muscle strain in his forearm?
Yeah, something like it's somewhere near his elbow. I'm not exactly sure where it is, but yeah, he's supposedly he's going to be back. They said he could be back for Bedlam next week. They might be more conservative and hold him back another week, but he won't. He should be back shortly. The MRI is clean.
How much do you think the committee, or should the committee, maybe this is a different question, how much should the committee give West Virginia credit for, considering that even their home series are road series? I mean, they played West Oklahoma this weekend in Charleston, which is clearly off campus. They played Kansas at Beckley, West Virginia. They're basically ride a bus, sleep in a hotel for pretty much every game, whether it's home or road, right?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. It's been. I think it should be a consideration. I mean, I really do. It's an extenuating circumstance here. I mean, this is a team that's 11-10 in true road games. They're 14-3 in quote unquote home games. And it's I think it's a factor. I mean, when you're having to leave campus every week, who nobody else is having to do that. I mean, that's. And it's not like they're going right down the street here. I mean, Beckley is a haul. Charleston is still a little bit of a ways from Morgantown, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, I'm not real familiar with West Virginia geography, but I know that it's not right down the street.
It's a couple hours, I think, for all these. And I got to give other thing we got to give West Virginia credit, besides just the fact that, Randy Mays has done a great job, the fact that they're tied for first place in this league is obviously a tremendous job, but their fans have also really come up, Aaron. You just go through that. They had 3,200 on Friday night, like 2,500 Saturday. They had 2,500 midweek against Pittsburgh. I know that's a rivalry game, but that was on campus. They had 2,500 on campus for a West Virginia Pittsburgh game. So let's give the West by God Virginia fans some credit for coming out and for coming out strong. And I think the other part of this is let's give, I think some real credit to I think you have to give real credit to these fans and this program and for Andrew Luck's dad. I forget his name, but he's the AD there and hiring Randy Maizey. I mean, Randy Maizey. Let's talk briefly about this, Aaron. But Randy Maizey, there were very few coaching free agents out there this offseason. Number one, who would have taken the job at West Virginia, and number two, who had a 50-win season on their resume like Randy Maizey, but guy's been a top-flight head coach at ACC, TCU, ACC schools, TCU, replaced Keith LeClair at East Carolina, left there under a cloud. Certainly, things did not end the way that he thought it would, and there was some on-field and some off-field stuff there. And there's a reason why he wasn't a head coach somewhere else, because there was, I think he was perceived, for lack of a better phrase, as a little bit of damaged goods. But what a job he's done at West Virginia. I think West Virginia, I think he was, this was just a case of the perfect fit of a guy who's good enough to be a high-level Big 12 head coach and who has a good resume, but the reason West Virginia could get him was because there were some other parts of the resume that other schools didn't want to touch, and it's just been a perfect marriage.
Yeah, and the guy can really coach. That's the bottom line. Everyone
That is
who,
the bottom line.
everyone who has coached with and against him and knows him, rave about his ability to do, to get the most out of his players. I mean, he did a great job at TCU. I had Ray Birmingham, New Mexico, texting me yesterday about how great a job Maizey is and how great of a coach he is. Just it's people have noticed what this program has done, and it's a big deal. I mean, for them to be where they are right now. I mean, they now for them to get into a regional, from an RPI standpoint, they need to win out to get into the top 45 according to this RPI needs report, which is not, it's not precise, but it's a good guideline. I mean, they still have RPI work to do, and the remaining series you got. You got TCU coming up, and then at Oklahoma State, so it's still not going to be easy. But they're playing well. They're playing as well as any team in the Big 12 right now, maybe better than any team in the Big 12 right now. They've won four straight series, two of them on the road at Liberty, at Texas, and then Kansas and Oklahoma. So I mean, they've got some momentum. It's a neat story.
Now, Kansas State has the highest RPI of any Big 12 team. Ho hum, they went on the road and beat Texas 2 out of 3. We talked about the Longhorns last week on the Google Plus Hangout. I know Bedlam is what they call it in Oklahoma when Oklahoma and Oklahoma State play. What's the Kansas State series called?
I
Is there a
don't
nickname?
know.
I mean, some kind of
The
Civil War reference?
Sunflower Showdown, I don't know.
That's it. But that's a pretty big one. Kansas State has a twice the RPI that Kansas has. Kansas, according to what I'm looking at, Kansas is at 48, Kansas State's at 24 on BoydsWorld.com. But I mean, if Kansas wins that series, is Kansas in? I mean, are both teams? It looks like both teams have a real shot to get at large bids.
Yeah, I think Kansas State's in really good shape regardless at this point. I mean, like you said, the RPI is pretty good. Now, they do have two d difficult series remaining at Kansas and then home against Oklahoma.
Right.
They could conceivably lose both those series. If, let's say they go 1-5 in those games, then maybe you're in trouble because then you're 12-13 in the league. They still would probably finish in the top 45. I mean, the RPI News report says they win one road game. Or one home, they just win one game, they'll still finish in the top 32. So I think they're probably still going to get in. But, it'll be better not to get swept in those last two series.
That is
But
for sure.
Kansas has a little more RPI work to do. And in the standings, they've got a little more work to do. But, getting swept last weekend by West Virginia hurt
Right.
Kansas's cause. But they're still only they're right in the mix in the pack in the Big 12. They're 12-9, so they're not far back. They finished at Utah non-conference series, in 2 weeks after they play Kansas State. So this is just a weird league. I mean, it's hard to get a handle on it. Baylor had been playing well. Baylor's been up and down and up and down. It seems like all year. 2 weeks ago they Baylor had won a big series and put themselves back in the mix for an out. large by sweeping Texas. And then last week they go to Kansas and get swept. And now I think they're back out of that large spot here, which is where they had been 3 weeks ago, you know, if they lost the series to TCU. So, I mean, it's just up and down and up and down with Baylor. But that's an important series for Kansas. And right now I like Kansas's chances more than Baylor's, that's for sure.
And both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, I mean, am I crazy? Is Oklahoma not a cinch to get in here? I mean, like, their RPI is right there next to Oklahoma State's. I mean, I guess what I'm – first off, let's talk about this Bedlam series. I mean, this is usually a very, very well-attended series, one of the better rivalries in college baseball. I mean, it's a great rivalry anyway, but it seems like it has a little bit more import in college baseball. Oklahoma has a national championship back in 1994. Oklahoma State has been to Omaha a ton of times over the years. You know, you have one game in Tulsa, two in Oklahoma City, so you have big, you know, big professional parks that these two teams usually sell out. But Oklahoma, a little funk here, a little Kyle Funkhauser here. They just haven't played very well lately. What is it, 6-7 in their last 13 games, and three of those wins are New Orleans. We talked about Dylan Overton being hurt. Then they after the Bedlam series, like you said, they finish at Oklahoma. I mean, at Kansas State. So I don't know. I'm wondering if both these teams do pretty well down the stretch. Say they go 1-2. One of them goes 1-2. Yeah, there's a 1-2 in the Bedlam series, and they both win that final series. I mean, could this be a 5 or 6 bid league, even though it feels like it should be like a 3 or 4 bid league? It feels like there's a lot of bunching up here.
There is a lot of bunching. Yeah, I think, you know, you could get Kansas State, Oklahoma, Kansas, Oklahoma State. I could see it being those four. I still think West Virginia is a long shot. I still think Baylor's probably not going to get in now. Okay. So I think you're looking at 3 or 4 is still feels to me like the more likely scenario.
So the most likely permutation is that the Big 12 sends 4 teams, and they're from the states of Oklahoma and Kansas. So no,
I think so.
And so we've talked about this briefly. I know we talked about it yesterday in our top 200 meeting a little bit with Jim Callis. Conference USA is going to send a more than likely going to send a team from Texas in Rice. But how many teams from the state of Texas are going to get into regionals, and how many are going to? Is anyone from the state of Texas going to host? Will there be any regionals in the state of Texas?
No, I really don't think so. I mean, Rice still has an outside chance, but I don't like their case very much. I think they've got a lot of work to do, and then that's it. There's nobody else who's even in the discussion to host in that state. It's brutal. The only other team that might even get into a regional at this point, I guess Baylor's still alive, but I don't like their case very much. But I mean, Sam, Houston State is probably the other team that you're looking at here. I mean, the Southland. When you talk about the Big 12, has all those teams from Texas, you know, Texas Christian, Texas Tech, and Baylor, and none of them is probably going to regionals. That's amazing.
That is really amazing. Texas A&M moving on to the Southeastern Conference, probably not going to get into regionals, 26 and 22. If the Southland winner comes from, like, say it was Central Arkansas, which has had the best RPI in that league, right?
Yep.
And at 43, say Central Arkansas wins that conference tournament, which, you know, I feel bad for Central Arkansas with the season they've had to just scuffle in the league at 11-10, just bad timing for the Bears. But if Oral Roberts is to win that tournament, I mean, and they've got the best pitcher.
Right.
And they certainly, I know it hasn't been done in the Southland Conference, but they certainly have a history of being a good tournament team. Or if Southeastern Louisiana wins, I mean, just it would just be amazing that the teams from the state of Texas, how few representatives from a college baseball standpoint, you can make the case that the state of Texas is the best state for college baseball. You can make that case. Not this year, obviously.
Yeah.
But historically, I think you can make that case with Texas's national championships, Rice. I would give the edge to California. But Texas is pretty doggone good, and just a brutal year. I would expect that Governor Perry will institute some kind of investigation into the downfall of college baseball in the state of Texas. Aaron, we did mention Conference USA here real quick. Also, with regard to Rice, WTF with Conference USA? This is a league that's that's had such a changing membership over the years. But in baseball, and when they came to this current membership. I know you've had this conversation, but with Rick Jones, Wayne Graham, all the coaches in that league between Southern Miss, Rice, Tulane, all have been to Omaha in the last decade. Houston's been a good program. East Carolina's been a good program. Central Florida's been a good program. Marshall's having a good year by its standards. With Aaron Blair going to get drafted high this year. Memphis has been solid over the years. But this is just a brutal year in this league. Is there any way this is more than a one-bid league? I guess someone else other than Rice wins the conference tournament, right?
That's the answer. You're not going to get more than one at-large bid in Conference USA. And for a while, I was kind of bullish on Southern Miss's chances. I thought the RPI would come up more than it has, and then this weekend they lose a series to ECU. So I already had kind of downgraded them
Right.
as an at-large team. But I still thought maybe if they win out and play well in the conference tournament, maybe. But they're shot now after losing that series to ECU. They need the automatic bid. They're the only other team. Rice is the only team in the top 40 in the RPI in that league. And I think they're also the only team in the top 50. Rice is number 37, and Houston
It's
is
54.
54.
That's
So there you go. I
amazing.
mean,
That is amazing.
it is amazing. And Houston, of course, had for a while we thought they'd be an at-large team, and then they hit the skids there, starting with that Seton, like starting really with the Marshall series back in early April. They lose to Seton Hall the following weekend. They lose to Rice. They lose to UCF. Get swept at UCF. Finally, this weekend, and a big week for Houston to kind of bounce back. They take a road series at Tulane and a midweek win at Louisiana Lafayette, which is a good win. But I still think it's too little too late for them. I mean, they're still alive. They're in the 50s. They need to finish strong. I'm not a believer.
Speaking of too little too late, East Carolina, my preseason Omaha sleeper, 11-4 in its last 15 games. They're 11-4 since losing in NC State on April 9th. And they've won four straight Conference USA series. And you look at their losses in Conference USA since then, three of them are, they have three Conference USA losses since they're all by one run. Maybe if they sweep that series at Tulane and win that 5-4 game, maybe if they win that game, that Friday game at Memphis, they lost 6-5. Maybe if they win that 10-9 game they lost this weekend to Southern Miss, and they're number 73 in the RPI, maybe East Carolina would have made that run. And their last four losses in Conference USA play are all by one run because the last game of their Rice series, they also lost. And then at Houston, they lost two one-run games. I mean, definitely some what-ifs for the Pirates this year. But
And they're sitting here 2-11 against the top 50. They just haven't beaten
that's it.
the good teams on their schedules.
That's it. No, that's exactly it. And you're gonna have to kind of look in the mirror on that one when the year is over. But tough year for the Pirates. Aaron, I also thought we would touch on a couple of other of the quote-unquote mid-major conferences. And we actually also
Yeah,
was it our first ticket punched in the not a mid-major but a small conference, our first conference
that's right.
64 team ticket punch this week with an upset in the Ivy League.
Yeah, it was Columbia, and actually, Columbia, as it turned
I
out,
guess it wasn't an upset.
they were hosting this thing. They finished with a one game better record than Dartmouth overall, but Dartmouth was still the kind of the team that has been the power in the Ivy League over the last half decade. I think they had been to five straight Ivy Championship series, and of course they've been to regionals, and they were the preseason pick and the defending champion. And Columbia swept them, and this is this Columbia team, exacting a little bit of revenge for 2010. This current senior class at Columbia was beaten by Dartmouth, I believe, in the 2010 Ivy Championship. So they got to get back there as an extra inning game in the first game of that doubleheader on Saturday, and then they broke it open late in the second game. But Columbia's got they got a little pitching. We'll write about more about them in three strikes this weekend. But they got some pitching with David Spear, who's had a really good year for them, and Joey Leno and Tim Gill, kind of a quality rotation. They got a few different guys in the bullpen. They're a little deeper in the pen than they have been in the past, and they got a real difference maker in Alex Black. I mean, that's kind of the guy for them. He's their two-way guy, leads them in home runs and hitting, and
Right.
he can run up there into the low 90s off the mound, and he's got some save four saves back there. So he's a really, I think, a really good player. But congratulations to the Lions.
I'll give a little kudos. This is a different, it's a different market, but they're showing attendance of 952 at Columbia. That's pretty good for an Ivy League game, is it not?
Sure, I agree.
I can't
Yeah.
remember seeing 1,000 people there. And also Columbia with a really cool story of with Joey Falcone, the son of ex-big leaguer Pete Falcone, who's what, a 26-year-old. He's a two-time was it a he's a was a either a Marine or an Army corpsman, so a medical officer. Went on two tours, We're in two wars. He took two tours. I don't think either of us, Aaron, can imagine what he saw with his own eyes in combat. And as a medical, as a medical person, a medical serviceman in combat zones like that, and just what he must have seen and gone through. And this guy's come back. He's got five home runs. He's been a little, giving them some thump in the middle of the lineup behind Alex Black. I think Columbia's a neat story, and I feel bad for Dartmouth because they've been so consistent. But this is the way the Ivy League does it. And, you know, so kudos to Coach Benetti and the Columbia Lions and New York City represented. So more teams, possible more teams, as many teams from New York City as from the whole state of Texas in the NCAA regionals, which is just crazy. Aaron, a couple other mid-major. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
How about you mentioned your Omaha sleeper before. How about my Omaha sleeper?
New Mexico.
New Mexico. Now clinching the Mountain West Conference. And I should add here, this is a good time to say that I think my crystal ball picks are in general across the board looking better than yours, because I feel pretty good about my player of the year pick with Chris Bryant. I feel pretty good about my freshman of the year pick with Alex Bregman. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Who was my player of the year pick? Colin Moran.
Was it Moran? I think it was probably Moran.
I feel terrible about that pick. He only leads the country and runs in RBIs. Yeah, the number one team in the country. That's horrible.
He's a pretty good player.
Who was your pitcher of the year?
We both had Rodon for that, and you had Mikey White for freshman. So, Mikey White's been, he's come on lately, but he's not Alex Bregman.
He is not Alex Bregman. Not offensively, not defensively. He is not Alex Bregman. Had a great scout comment the other day about Alex Bregman where he said he's like a 40 or 50 runner depending on the day. So you can probably say a 50 runner, but it's like seven range. You know, you usually don't see guys who are average or fringy runners at shortstop who have tremendous range. But he said Alex Bregman does. That's instincts. That's playability. Just a difference maker for LSU. Aaron, that's as good a segue as any that we're going to get to the SEC, which it's a Baseball America College podcast with Aaron Fitt and John Manuel. There has to be some SEC talk. And kind of a chalk week in the Southeastern Conference, Aaron. I guess the big takeaways are South Carolina fans, let not your heart be troubled. We didn't move them up last week. We didn't move them down this week. They stay at 15 in the rankings, but got to be a little disappointing, I think, for the fighting Holbrooks, for South Carolina to lose that both games to Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt, Aaron, I mean, just Zomek and Beattie. Those guys are just machines. You know, is there any chink in the armor for Vanderbilt? Is there any weakness you see to this team?
No, I really don't. I mean, the questions that we had, the few questions we had about this team in the preseason, and there weren't many because we almost ranked in preseason number one. You know, the starters needed to prove themselves. They had the talent, and they needed to live up to it. And mission accomplished. I mean, Zomek and Beattie have been fantastic all year long. And you know, the bullpen is so deep, and the lineup is powerful. Full and fast, and they play defense. They do everything. I mean, I think Vince Condi has handled that. To me, was the other key thing, was the shortstop position. Yeah. You know, the left side of the infield in general, and you know, Vince Condi at shortstop has been the answer. He's been really good for them. They really like him. So you know, no, there's no chink in the armor. I think they're really good, and I don't think we need to spend a ton of time talking about the SEC, but because you know, we've talked a lot about that league all year. But you're right. I mean, it's that was a notable series. I mean, for Vanderbilt to be 21-2 right now, still it's still pretty mind boggling.
Yeah, I just want to hit a couple of high notes, and to me, that's one of them. Another one would be talking about the Magnolia State a little bit, Mississippi and Mississippi State. We've talked about those teams a lot this year, but Ole Miss, Aaron. Maybe the least impressive 12-12 SEC team in recent, at least this year, they certainly are. And Mississippi State, how much has their sweep of Alabama hurt Alabama's chances at being a regional club? It feels like Alabama's still in that mix, but it certainly doesn't help anything, does it?
No, they're fine though. I think. I mean, they're still in the high 30s in the RPI, and you know, they're close to 500 in the league at 11-12. I kind of thought. They needed to get to 13 wins, maybe 14 for an at-large. And, you know, they've got Missouri coming in this week. It's a series they should win. You know, Missouri's 14-28. So if you win that series, you're up to 13 wins. If you take two out of three, if you sweep it, then you're up to 14 wins. And then I think you're really in. And you know, with Vanderbilt coming up the last weekend, you probably, you know, I imagine they're going to get swept at Vanderbilt because I think Vanderbilt's really good and better than Alabama, but you never know. They could win a game there. But I still think Alabama's in pretty good shape. I think Mississippi State needed this. That was a big road sweep for them to kind of help their hosting chances. And Ole Miss, it's amazing. You're right. They're 12-12 in the league. They're still in the top 20 in the RPI, and yet it feels like this is a team that's not really in the hosting mix anymore. They've just really scuffled in the second half. They've taken care of business. They did sweep Tennessee. They swept Alabama. But other than that, I mean, really, those are the two series that are kind of propping them up.
Yeah, that's what's the
they
word.
They lost home series to. Yeah,
that's the word, Aaron. To me, neither of these teams, Alabama and Ole Miss, they're going to get in. I understand they're going to get in, but so here's Alabama's series. They won two games at home against Texas A&M, and they won two out of three at Auburn, and they swept Georgia at Georgia. They won two out of three against Tennessee, but every other series against their other big win is winning two out of three at Florida Atlantic. And let's give them credit; that's a good series win. They went on the road and won, two out of three low scoring games at Florida Atlantic. For the weekend, they outscored Florida Atlantic 9-7. So welcome to the new college baseball. But series loss at home to Tulane, swept that Louisville. Lost a home to Arkansas, swept at Ole Miss, lost, and then I guess they beat LSU, so winning one game there. But this, anytime they've played a good team, they really need, in my mind, they need to sweep Missouri. I would, if I were them, I'd feel like you need to sweep Missouri or at least win that series.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just don't feel like you want to be at 30 or 31 wins overall and just leave it. That's just awfully close.
And the Missouri series is a must win. They don't win that series, I don't think they get in.
I agree. I agree completely. And then Ole Miss, I mean, again, this is a team that when they've played better teams outside of sweep at Alabama and Tennessee,
And winning two out of three at Arkansas. They won two out of three at Arkansas. Let's not forget.
I'm not forgetting. But, like, since then, do they have another series win? Those are the only two series they've won.
That's it. And
Kentucky's trending down. Auburn's not good. It's just a very underwhelming resume. I know you have to take the whole totality of it. I get it. But, boy, the trend there is pretty bad. For me, the top five teams in the SEC are real easy. I mean, Vanderbilt and LSU are clearly 1-2. It's not close to me. They're on a pedestal. Then South Carolina, Arkansas, Mississippi State. Arkansas is third in that. I think they're the third best team. They certainly aren't a juggernaut. They have some flaws. All three of those teams have some flaws, but I mean, like, I guess Florida is the next team, Florida or Ole Miss. But I mean, I don't feel great about any SEC team other than those top five.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Kentucky has certainly been exposed, and that was a team that I liked a lot earlier in the season. Ole Miss has been exposed. I mean, Ole Miss lost five. You lose five out of eight conference series. I know the SEC is tough, but that's the thing about the SEC this year is that it has, it has that soft underbelly that you can pad your record against and prop yourself up. Because if you're playing against the other teams, that's good enough to help you. You're playing LSU, and if you get swept, it's going to help you in the RPI.
Right.
And then you can pad your record by taking care of business against the Tennessees and the Georgias and the Auburns. It kind of helps that league. I think they're going to send nine teams to regionals, assuming Alabama does what it needs to do this weekend against Missouri.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I'm necessarily impressed with those teams, those 6-9 teams. I'm not, really.
I'll tell you, Auburn is going to be kicking itself because they finally win that series against Ole Miss. I feel like Auburn's kicking itself because they won that series at Texas A&M. They have a couple of decent series on their resume, but losing a series at Missouri – I know that was rain interrupted and a tough rain series. Then losing at home to Alabama, your big in-state rival, but you were at home. They didn't sweep Georgia. It's just gonna be kicking. It feels like Auburn's a team that could have snuck in to regionals. Any of these teams, it's just a game here or there because you know that eight or nine teams from your league are gonna get in. But I do feel like the overall conference RPI is really gonna be hurt by those three bottom feeders in the SEC East, which of course it's always hilarious to me that Missouri. As in the SEC East, it's hard for me to get past that point.
Right.
Speaking of teams trending down, Aaron, do we want to talk anything about Georgia Tech at all this week? Losing to Coastal Carolina in a weekend series. I mean, how does that affect the ACC from a tournament, from a stock report standpoint? I mean, is Georgia Tech in danger of not making it to regionals? I mean, could they lose a spot to, say, Miami, considering that Miami did sweep St. John's this weekend, so at least their overall record looks a little better.
I mean, right now I still have both those teams in, probably. I still think it's an 8-bid league, but Georgia Tech is certainly trending in the wrong direction. That's obvious. This has been a real meltdown in the second half of the season, starting really with I guess the Duke series that they lost on the road, and the offense hadn't been the same since. I mean, they're not scoring runs the way they used to score runs. And this weekend they scored 4 runs and then 4 runs and then 8 runs and lost in that Sunday game because their pitching is, I mean, it's just up and down. I mean, you never know what, Cole Pitts could give you a great start on Sunday or he could get shelled. Farmer even has not been as good as he was early.
Right. He was better this
Dusty
weekend, but he
Isaacs.
hasn't been tremendous.
Yeah, and their defense is I don't trust at all. They make too many errors. They make them at the wrong time. They make boneheaded plays. I'm not impressed. And I thought, hey, I admit it. I bought in on this team early in the season. I thought this team was for real this time. I mean, I thought, you look at their roster, their lineup 1 through 9, and you're thinking, man, these guys, they're experienced. They're physical, they're powerful, they beat you with speed, they can beat you a lot of different ways. And it's just more of the same.
It's
Georgia
brutal.
Tech.
It's brutal,
It's
man.
just
It is brutal. You want to try to make excuses, and not you, but I mean in general. And I mean their talent is, they're going to have what? How many guys did I have in the top 200 for them the other day? Five? Kyle Wren was just on the.
Farmer.
Kyle Wren was close, but Farmer, Thomas, Evans, Palka,
Yeah.
and Evans would probably be in both as a pitcher and as a hitter if you could split him into two players. And Kyle Wren's not far off, but the most inexplicable series of all this, out of all of it, is that they won 2 out of 3 at home against Virginia. It seemed like they were riding the ship, even though they didn't score in that
Right.
series. You're like, well, they battled. You had to give them credit. They kind of battled in that, but boy, since then, swept at home by NC State, swept 2 out of 3, lost at Clemson, and then to lose at home to Coastal, and now they've got North Carolina. I just wonder, Aaron, if that last series at Miami, if that might not be like a loser does not get in.
Let's say Georgia Tech gets swept this weekend by North Carolina.
Which is
I
very
don't think
reasonable to
that'll happen.
expect. I think it's reasonable
Yeah,
to expect.
but it's in Atlanta, and historically that's a place the Tar Heels have struggled. UNC is coming off the exam break now. You never know.
True,
Maybe there's
true.
who knows. But I mean, on the other hand, Georgia Tech has to go to Ohio State midweek and play 2 games. So that's gonna, I think that'll deplete them a little bit heading into this big series. Not great timing for that trip, I think. But let's say Georgia Tech gets swept. They're 12-15 in the league. Then that Miami series becomes a must win, and I still think if they get to 14 wins in the league, they're probably okay. But this is it's become a lot closer than I thought it would be. And Miami's case, they're at Wake Forest this weekend. Certainly, that's a must win series. I think they're at 11 wins in the league. Again, I think 14 is kind of that real magic number. If you can be at least 14 and 16 with a good RPI in the ACC, then I think you're probably still going to get in.
So, crazy question to wrap this up. Does Maryland, if Maryland's got this doubleheader today at Clemson with the
Right.
rain that's played havoc with that series. If Maryland sweeps that, I'm just playing hypothetical. I don't think Maryland will. But then they
Right.
have Boston College at home. Maryland's RPI is 21. So if Maryland just,
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, I mean, if they sweep those 5 games, they get to 14 and 16 in ACC play. Or what? But what if they go 4-1? If they're 13-17 in the league, with about 31, 32, 33 wins, I guess. Does Maryland have an at-large bid shot at the expense of Miami or Georgia Tech? Is that possible, or am I crazy?
Yeah, I tweeted about this yesterday, about this possibility. Watch out because all of a sudden you look up and this team, Maryland, has not won series this year.
Oh,
They've
that's.
lost 2 out of 3 to Virginia Tech. They lost 2 out of 3 to Miami. They lost 2 out of 3 to North Carolina. Lost 2 out of 3 to North Carolina State. They lost 2 out of 3 to Wake Forest, Florida State, Virginia. They lost every ACC series this year until this past weekend against Duke, at Duke. And then now if they can win this Clemson series. Maybe they win the Boston College series. Look, the committee. I don't think the committee cares if you win series. I don't think they look at that
I think you're right.
the way you and I do. If we were
Or
building,
the way coaches do, which is the crazy thing.
yeah,
Coaches
I
look
mean,
at that.
winning series. I'm telling you, that's what it's all about. You got to win 2 out of 3. You win 2 out of 3, you can get all the way to Omaha. You know, I mean,
It's the way the postseason is structured. It's the way the regular season is structured. So it's just so much. It is integral to college baseball. It is inherent to success in college baseball is the ability to win series. And I think, like you're right, the committee doesn't even seem like they look at it.
And so, if Maryland, I agree with you, if let's say they get to 13 or 14 wins in the league with a strong RPI, yeah, I think they got a chance. I don't think they deserve to get in with a resume that includes series losses to everybody they played until the last couple
I
weeks.
think you're right.
Yeah, I think they got a chance. And, I mean, just the fact that they went to LSU and got swept in the first weekend helps their RPI.
No doubt.
I mean, and for me, that's not enough. It's not enough to play good teams. I want to see you win series against good teams, and they haven't. But if they win one this weekend, then that'll be finally a feather in their cap, and they'll be in the discussion.
Spoken like a true Padawan learner. I don't want to just, you said it just like, I don't want to see you just play teams. You need to beat good teams. Don't just play them. Show me you can beat them. They really haven't done
And for
that.
the and the best thing that they've got going for them is they haven't gotten swept very much. They got swept by North Carolina,
Yep, that's it.
and I think that's it. I mean, they've managed to at least win one game against Virginia and Florida State and North
That's
Carolina
it.
State and Miami and Virginia Tech. So that's, hey, that's something going
They're
for them.
only they've been swept twice by the number one and number three teams in our rankings, and which I think are also one and three in the RPI, are they not? North Carolina and LSU. So
I think that's about right.
I mean, so kudos to, I do think John Scheff, the coach of Maryland, has done a nice job. Aaron, that's our segue to what we're going to talk about on today's Google Plus Hangout. If you're listening to this podcast, probably after the live Hangout, go back and watch the Hangout. We're talking College Coach of the Year candidates. I don't think John Scheff's necessarily a candidate for Coach of the Year nationally. I do think he has won in the ACC. I don't think he'll win it, but I think he's done a real nice job. But Fitzy, great job on the podcast. I think you may have won today's podcast, Aaron. So
I win every podcast, Johnny.
I don't know about that, Fitzy. That's a high bar you're setting there. But I do want to remind people that the season's podcast is sponsored by Project Lomo. Logan Morrison of the Miami Marlins lost his dad to cancer in 2010 and has worked tirelessly for a cause he cares about, fighting lung cancer. Now he's asking young fans to find a cause they care about and do something about it. Last Wednesday, Logan visited Miami High School to officially launch the program and address an audience of more than 300 students. You can learn about it at projectlomo.mlblogs.com. It's a really great initiative, and the young fans who do the most amazing projects will have a chance to go to a Marlins game, meet Logan Morrison and some of his teammates, throw out the first pitch, and win $1,000. It is a truly a worthy cause, and we're really excited to have Project Lomo sponsor this year's podcast. And that's once again projectlomo.mlblogs.com. So for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on next week's Baseball America College Podcast. So long, everybody.